Chapter 32. As they walked along, he breathed in her scent. Equal parts vanilla, coconut suntan spray, lavender, and parts something else he couldn't readily identify. It was all heady stuff, and he fought against it because he needed to keep his head straight tonight. Nice place.
Brad had it built a few years ago, before we met. He's into things like this. He has homes everywhere. Two jets, a yacht he uses like 1 month out of the year, his own chopper. It's too much for me. I like things simple.
Doesn't sound like you're going to get simple with the guy. She led him to the bar and he got another beer, and she had a Cosmo. She held up the glass.
I was only 4 when Sex and the City ended its run, but I later binged all the seasons. What a fun fantasy. But really, no one can live like that in New York on their salaries. Same with friends.
Like you said, a fun fantasy. So how did you and Cal meet?
He was in Italy, and I was in Italy, and we hit it off. I know he's a lot older than me, but he doesn't seem it. Some days I feel like the older one. He's still very much a little boy in many ways, with all his toys.
He's made a ton of money in business.
He never talks business with me. I'm not into that.
So do you live here?
Not all the time. Brad and I are just, I don't know, boyfriend and girlfriend, to use an old-fashioned term.
And what are you into when you're not hanging out with him?
Travel. I went to college for a year, didn't like it, and decided to see some of the world. That's how I met Brad. I was staying at a student hostel in Tuscany, and he had rented, like, 3 villas on a hillside. We met at a restaurant, bonded over some really great Brunello di Montalcino wine, and suddenly I was in one of the villas.
Hey, good for you. How long ago was this?
Nearly a year now. Time goes by. How do you know Brad?
I work for his firm. Just a low-level newbie. I got a late start.
What were you doing before that?
Did some time in the army.
Why?
He had expected her to thank him for his service like everyone else, so this threw Divine a little. He answered more truthfully than he probably intended. To piss off my old man. She laughed, and it was a nice, throaty laugh. She sipped her Cosmo and gave him a look that he couldn't quite decipher.
Do you like working for Brad?
Just chasing the money, like everybody else. She wrinkled up her nose and looked around.
I watched you when you came in. You looked very uncomfortable. You got a beer instead of something expensive and hip. You don't really want to be here.
And yet here I am, summoned by the man. She looked disappointed in this response.
Like a dog on a leash, you mean?
He took a mouthful of his beer and worked this around in his head. He decided to take control of the conversation. A woman at my firm was found dead. Suicide, they thought. Now it looks like murder.
I heard about that. What was her name again?
Sarah Hughes.
Is that why you're here to talk to Brad?
I don't know.
Did you know her?
I did.
Why would anyone want to kill her?
That's what the cops are trying to find out. She shivered.
There are so many creeps in this world.
He looked past her, out to the pool area. My train comes through here early every morning. It stops right behind this place for reasons unknown to anyone other than some systems engineer. She glanced where he was looking.
I'm in the pool sometimes in the morning.
I know you are. He let that hang out there. She looked back at him, her manner unapologetic and her eyes wide and seeing everything.
So you're trying to tell me, in a painfully roundabout way, that you've checked me out?
Me and every other guy on board. I think the popularity of the 620 is spiking. Word gets around. Now her face flushed, and not in a good way. I didn't say that to embarrass you, he said hastily. I'm just amazed you're up that early. She composed herself.
I like to have time to myself. Meditate, swim.
That's a good thing. She sharpened her look at him.
Don't patronize me.
He said, not my intent. Before I catch the train, I do a full workout starting at 4 a.m. I guess that's a form of meditation for me. Endorphins, fresh start to the day.
You look very fit,
she said, running her gaze over him so slowly and provocatively that he felt like he was naked. Army sort of required it, and I've kept it up because I like to be able to take care of myself, like I did in that alley.
I wasn't aware that people on the train could see the pool area. There are trees back there.
Right, but there's also a gap. She gave him an enigmatic look.
I'll have to keep that in mind.
Okay.
6:20. Why do you go into work so early?
In my world, if you want to make it to the next round, you have to work your ass off and beat the other guys.
Sounds like a fast track to a heart attack.
Maybe. I guess you know pretty much everybody here?
No, not everybody. There are always new faces. Brad knows lots of people.
So when you're not here, where do you go?
I have a little walk-up apartment in Soho.
He didn't ask if Cowell had arranged it for her. He didn't have to. She hadn't mentioned having a job, and it didn't sound like she came from money, since she had been staying in a hostel in Italy. And even little walk-ups in New York were not cheap, particularly in Soho. Do you work around there? She ignored the query and said,
maybe I'll see you sometime. Or you could come by here and go for a swim with me. Maybe late at night, when Brad's not here. He stays at his penthouse a lot.
This one caught him like a left hook. I'm not sure how my boss would feel about my swimming with you alone at night. No, I am sure how he'd feel about it. He'd fire me.
Why? I'm his girlfriend, not his wife.
Who knows? You might end up being his wife.
Not in the cards. I don't want that. And neither does he. He'll trade me in for a younger model at some point.
And how do you feel about that?
I don't feel anything about it.
So what's in it for you?
Just something different. So, how about that swim? You game?
Divine was having a hard time keeping up with her. I imagine a place like this is loaded with help, servants, whatever you want to call them. Lots of wandering eyes to tell on us.
Like they would care. Brad treats them like crap.
If he's that kind of guy, why do you stay with him?
You assume I have a choice.
Don't you?
Give me your phone number. I can text you my address if coming here makes you nervous.
For some reason that was not entirely clear to him, Divine told her his number, and Montgomery put it in her phone.
Now I see Brad coming, so I'll say goodbye. I'll be at my place tomorrow night. I'll text you the address, just in case you're interested.
She walked off as Divine turned to see Cowell bearing down on him like an Abrams tank. Chapter 33. Divine, right? Said Cowell. He had on jeans, a black shirt open enough to reveal dark, curly chest hair, and loafers. His hair wasn't slicked back, like he wore it at the office. He was less Gordon Gekko and more tousled hair man-child, but with something definite and important on his mind.
I'm Travis Divine.
Come with me. He headed off and Divine followed. He glanced around and saw Michelle Montgomery staring at them. She raised her Cosmo and added a supportive look. Divine thought they would head to a private room. Instead, Cowell led him outside, to the pool area. There wasn't anyone else around, so it was private, and maybe prearranged. Divine spotted a beefy security guard hovering at the rear door, probably to make sure no one else came out here. The lights were lit, and fancy tiki torches kept the bugs away, though crickets sounded off all around them, and the smell of freshly mown grass dominated. Cal sat at a table next to the pool and motioned for Devine to sit across from him. Devine did and put his beer down. Cal didn't look at him. He stared at the pool and then the wall beyond it. Devine followed his gaze and saw the outbound train slowly passing by. The lights were on in the train, and through the gap he was used to looking at from the other side, he could see a collection of weary New Yorkers. Their heads were bent and shoulders slumped, some half-dozing, as they returned from battle to catch some sleep and get up the next morning to do it all over again. "Poor assholes," said Cal.
"Why's that?"
"Schlepping on a train in and out every day like mice on a treadmill.
But on the other hand, I need them to do exactly that to keep my dream going. But I'm not a total dick, despite what some say about me. I was born into money, and then by the time I could count, it was all gone because my father and grandfather were morons. So I know what it's like to have zip. I could have grown up a legacy kid, gotten into all the Ivy Leagues I needed through those connections. And then I could have become an entitled prick, all nice and polite and holding my fork and cup just so while I stab you in the back. Instead, I'm a street fighter who chooses to stab you in the front, which you have to admit is a lot fairer."
He eyed Devine as though to make sure he was listening, really listening to all this.
"So, I know what it's like to ride that train, but it's partly a gravy train. They're not doing it for free. And the lowest paid on there, who work in my world, make a shitload more money than most folks."
"Okay, I get that." Now Devine wondered if Cowell had allowed the gap to be there so those poor suckers on the train could see how opulently he lived. He was just that kind of a jerk.
"You live somewhere around here, right?"
asked Cowell. "But not this neighborhood, out of my price range. I share a townhouse with three other people."
"Uh-huh."
He drummed his fingers on the teak tabletop.
"You knew Sarah Hughes, I understand."
"I did." He hesitated, mulling over how best to play this. He decided to slide a stack of chips forward on the pass line and roll the dice.
"Did you know her?"
Cowell knifed him with a glare.
"I'm asking the questions, Devine, not you."
Devine took a breath and rolled his neck from one side to the other, letting the tension ease.
"You want to throw a punch? Throw it,"
said Cowell, who was watching him closely.
"Then I bury you under legal bills and you go to jail for assault."
He paused and made his own play.
"And maybe for more than that."
Devine didn't take the bait. He reverted back to his military training. When in doubt, say nothing. When not in doubt, double down on that advice. The train moved on with its beaten-down riders, and still Cowell did not speak. He was now staring at the dark pool waters so intently, Devine wanted to check to see if there was a body floating in there.
"I'm trying to come up with the best way of handling this, Devine."
"Handling what?"
"The cops are interested in you. I hope you're smart enough to know that. Otherwise, you have no business working for me."
"They've talked to me, they know certain things, they've talked to other people. They have no proof I had anything to do with Sarah's death, because I didn't."
"Except for one thing, and it's a big one."
Devine knew exactly what that one thing was. The entry log, showing him in the building and on the 52nd floor in the time window necessary to kill Hughes.
"Then why haven't they arrested me?" "You can thank me for that,"
was Cowell's surprising reply. Devine tensed more than a bit.
"You'll have to walk me through that one." "It's delicate. It's all delicate, Devine."
He abruptly sat up straight from his slouched position.
"A dead body in a building invites all sorts of attention. Unwanted scrutiny for a firm like mine."
"Why?"
"It's obvious, Devine. Shit, are you that stupid?"
"Maybe." He held up one stubby finger, even as Devine's mind wandered to the image of him walking out of that office, zipping up his pants, not far from where Hughes had been strung up, while Jennifer Stamos was lying naked with her thighs still spread on a metal desk with a laminated top, cheap on cheap. Cowell said,
"The one major asset I have isn't money or talent, it's respectability.
People pay us enormous amounts of money because we are respectable. No scandal, no dirt, no Ponzi Bernie Madoffs, no blood-sucking Enrons, no dickhead Ivan Boskys. They are the kiss of death. A murder is not the same thing as financial crimes, noted Devine. You have to go deeper than that, Devine. No one is implying that we're stealing their money by Sarah's body being found there. But in the backs of their heads, clients will think, do I risk it? Why go with them when I could go with Morgan Stanley or Merrill Lynch or one of their other competitors? And it doesn't take much to move the needle, because we all do basically the same thing.
You can't make the murder go away, Mr. Cowell. The cops are not going to stop investigating because you're afraid it will cost you clients and business. Which brings me back to you. Did you kill her?
No.
Did you hire someone to do it?
And give them my security card?
Why do you say that?
Devine wasn't about to give away his hacking game on that one.
How else could they have gotten in the building and accessed the floor Sarah was found on?
Uh-huh.
And then Cowell unloaded a shocker. And maybe there's security video of someone who looks a lot like you coming in and out at the required time.
He glanced at Devine for his reaction to this. Devine had looked down at his drink for precisely this reason. When he looked up, he was composed.
I'm no computer genius, but give me the right equipment and a little time and I could put your face on somebody else's body and walk it anywhere I wanted.
Is that right?
You just bought a company 2 months ago that does that very thing.
Cybersurgeon, yeah, I know. We're going to flip that sucker in a year and make a killing because, like you said, they can do that very thing.
Which means truth becomes meaningless because you can invent your own. Not that people don't already do that all the time. Only with this technology, the lie becomes very convincing.
And there goes any proof of anything, said Devine.
Maybe. Or maybe not. If the cops believe what they think they see, and then a jury does too, you got about $1 million to spend on the best lawyers? And that's probably the minimum you're going to need.
No, I don't. Nowhere close.
Then I don't care if you didn't kill the woman. You're screwed, replied Cowell.
Justice in America?
Reality in America. And for your information, we don't have a justice system in this country. We have a legal system. I got a whole platoon of in-house lawyers and 15 more on the outside on retainer, all top of the heap in talent and connections. And I still don't think it's enough. Just the cost of doing business. Courthouse is open to every son of a bitch who wants to play the legal lottery, and I am one big target.
So why am I here?
I wanted to see what kind of guy you are, Devine. Military, combat guy, medals, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I got all that. But I wanted to talk to you, feel you out, poke inside your head.
He looked at the facial injuries.
Hurt much?
Devine could tell the man knew what had happened from Stamos.
Not even a little bit.
Cowell gave a sneering smile.
All right.
Devine decided to attempt a draw to an inside straight. He pulled out his phone and laid it down in front of him.
I've spoken to Jennifer Stamos a couple times. Saw her at a bar, too.
Oh, yeah? Why do I care?
Cowell didn't even look at the phone.
Devine glanced down at it.
I heard you were mentoring her like you were Sarah.
I mentor dozens, but they're not all like Jennifer.
They're not all sweet cheeks.
Cowell now looked at the phone.
Maybe you are smart enough to work for me.
Maybe I am.
And maybe I need to think about this some more, rather than bring the hammer down like I thought I was going to.
Maybe you should. Like you said, it's delicate. He paused and chose his next words carefully.
But then again, you can always just fire me.
The man shook his head.
Friends close and enemies closer, Devine. That's the way I do business. And thanks for confirming for me which one you are.
He rose and walked away, leaving Devine to stare down at his phone and let out a tight, uncomfortable breath.
Funny, when you'd been in a war and had killed others and been nearly killed yourself, you wouldn't think a battle of words could stress you all that much.
But getting fingered for a murder charge and spending the rest of your life in prison did give a man pause. At least it does this man. He rose and walked right through the palace, not making eye contact with anyone. And outside, he ran right into Christian Chilton. Chapter 34.
What in the hell are you doing here?
Chilton snapped. He instinctively took a step away from Devine, his fists made and held at the ready. But the fear in the man's eyes told Devine that Chilton would haul ass before fighting him again. Devine studied him. The bandages were gone, but the bruises and cuts were still there.
Just visiting a friend. What? In there? Bullshit!
You never know where you might find one.
Rick needs major dental work, and Doug has a fractured jaw.
I know you were lights out and didn't see, but I let Rick walk with only a sore gut. Then Rick decided to try and crack my skull while my back was turned. He's lucky it's not worse. Chilton looked over Devine's injured face.
At least my buddies got their wax in. And you sucker punched me, you asshole.
While I was standing right in front of you and you were coming at me with fists raised?
You know what I mean. You were running your mouth. It wasn't a duel where you count to three. You wanted to fight, so I fought. It was 3-1. What the hell did you expect? Marquess of Queensberry rules?
And I gave you lots of chances to walk away, but you wouldn't take them. But if it makes you feel any better, I couldn't raise my arms over my shoulders for a whole day, and my back still aches like a son of a bitch. He touched his face. And I'm not getting any better looking with brick face. The two men glared at each other for a few seconds. Chilton finally said,
Yeah, I guess fighting over that woman was pretty stupid.
Fights over girls usually are, said Devine, who was still suspicious of why Chilton had even been at the bar that night.
So you frequent that place? Sometimes. Did you really know her?
We work in the same office. A friend of ours died there.
Shit, I read about that. Suicide, right?
That's what they initially thought. Now it looks like someone killed her. Chilton went all wide-eyed on this, which made Devine even more suspicious.
Damn, do they know who did it?
Not yet. One more thing.
What?
Asked Chilton. You were at that bar in Greenwich Village hitting on a girl who works at Cowell and Cumley. Now you're here.
So what?
Did you follow the woman to the bar and pretend to hit on her? Otherwise, I'm feeling a bit of a coincidence here.
In case you didn't know, the New York financial world is pretty small, and that bar is popular with our crowd, so piss off.
As Chilton started to turn away, Devine said, Hummingbird? Chilton turned back.
What?
Word on the street is your firm is interested in funding Hummingbird's next investment round.
How do you know anything about that?
I work in that little financial world you just referred to, and I keep my ears open.
How do you even know about me or my firm?
Your family came over on the Mayflower. Everybody knows you.
You're really starting to tick me off.
Not really my intent, and we already did that dance. Actually, a friend of mine told me, how can you do the Hummingbird deal so fast?
I don't have to explain my business to you.
You're right, you don't. But if you want my 2 cents, Hummingbird is a great company. It's going to be worth a shitload really soon. Your investment will be worth $100 million in a year. Chilton's aggressive attitude faded.
Based on what?
Based on the CEO. She's the smartest person I've ever met in my life. MIT grad, Harvard MBA, world-class gamer. There's nothing she can't do with a computer. And she lives and breathes Hummingbird. Her subscription base is soaring, she's got positive cash flow, her business strategy is sound, and all she needs is the capital to be the preeminent platform out there. And it's a big market, and only getting bigger.
You sound like her CMO,
said Chilton, referring to a chief marketing officer.
You got skin in the game?
About 0.001%, but I believe in her. I've been around a lot of business types, some good, some terrible. She's really in a league of her own. Chilton looked away for a moment. When he glanced back at Devine, his entire demeanor had changed.
Everything you just said comports with what we found in our preliminary due diligence.
So can you really do the deal that fast? She's got other suitors, but nobody who can pull the trigger as quick as you guys. Chilton smiled. We've heard that before. Fact is, we've got a ton of capital to deploy, and I've been looking at the online dating space for a while now. Tapshaw's coming at it from a whole other angle. Not just dating, but a whole other array of services and benefits. It shows in the sophistication and thoroughness of the business product she's put together. I think she really wants to bring people together. Most of the other platforms are clearly in it just for the bucks. At least that's my opinion. So where did you hear about her? We have spies everywhere. She talked to a Taiwanese VC firm recently. The Taiwanese don't screw around. If they're interested, we need to be interested. So you haven't met Tapshaw yet? No, but we have officially reached out to her. We hope to have a face-to-face with her very soon. This was all sounding legit to Divine. Maybe Chilton wasn't targeting Tapshaw because she was Divine's roommate. Maybe he didn't even know they were roommates. So where does all your money come from? Just professional curiosity, he added. Chilton looked for a moment like he might lash out again. He shrugged. I can't give out names, but from all over, family offices to institutional investors. My grandfather started Mayflower. I'm no wunderkind who built something from scratch. I'm just this generation's rep. Been groomed for it from first grade. We have ties to everybody. Brad Cowell? Chilton looked up at the house. You must know him since you're here. He's my boss. He invited me here to meet. Chilton looked at Divine in a different light. How'd your meeting go with him? Too soon to tell. So you're friends with Cowell, then? We do business together. He did the same with my father before he died. Good luck with Hummingbird. Treat her right and you won't regret it. But you're not the only game in town, so be prepared to pay a premium valuation. Oh, I met Michelle Montgomery, too. Very nice. You know her? Yeah, she's actually a family friend. I was over here the other night visiting her. I know. Funny that you know her and she knows Cowell and you work with Cowell, too. Another coincidence. No coincidence about it. I was the one who introduced Michelle to Brad. This was over in Italy. Really? You had no interest yourself? We grew up together, and I thought it would be good for Michelle. Rich boy and a girl who stays in student hostels grew up together? Curious. Well, have a fun time in there. Divine watched him walk inside, and then he left, got on his bike, and sped off. He couldn't believe that he'd threatened the head of one of the biggest investment firms in the world. If Cowell got the cops involved, if he said Divine had tried to blackmail him, the guy could probably make it stick, and Divine didn't have enough money to hire the legal firepower to fight back, just like Cowell had intimated. So basically, I'm SOL. And what else is new? And if he got swept out to sea, there was no way in hell Emerson Campbell was throwing him a rope. Unlike being in the army, now it was sink or swim all by his lonesome. Chapter 35.
Dude?
Divine walked into the house and saw Valentine on the couch. Yeah?
Cowell is not doing high-frequency trading from your building.
Divine sat down next to him. How do you know that already? I thought you were still thinking about whether to look into it or not.
So I changed mind. Kill me. Anyway, I track flow over pipe and confirm on both ends. It's very unique stream of data. Like a river that is green.
He laughed.
Green. You get my little joke?
Yeah, very little.
There aren't many that do trading like that. Easy to check.
Okay, you say Cowell isn't doing high-frequency trading, but I know that they do have a division that does that. And you said you confirmed that data flow, so I'm a little confused.
That is what I am talking about, dude. You are right. They have high-frequency trading platform, only it operates out of building in Queens. That is pipe I trace.
You're sure? He looked at Divine with his head cocked and his features full of incredulity.
Dude! Digital signature is unique, okay? I'm no amateur.
Okay, so what is Area 51 in my building, then? Did you manage to hack in there? Valentine looked down at his screen.
It is well protected. Take a lot of time to get in, and maybe not even then.
Divine had a thought. Could they be doing crypto mining in my building?
It's possible. Takes lots of energy and computational power. Lots of people doing it. But in the end, I think it is bad thing.
Why?
It's perfect for ransomware. You can trace money wire, but very difficult to do with something like Monero, a decentralized crypto, very private. You can negotiate terms, and really professional hackers always keep their word and unlock the encrypted files. Only way they stay in business. But it's still bad, because you can't find where money went.
Then I have to find another way to see what they're doing on that floor.
Why?
It might have something to do with Sarah Hughes's death.
You mean she might have found out what is going on there?
Prime motive for murder, don't you think? Depending on what's there?
Maybe. But dude, crypto mining is not illegal.
But it might not be crypto mining. And Sarah might have heard or seen something she shouldn't have, and maybe that's where the untraceable email came from. This got Valentine's interest.
How will you get in there?
I can't access the floor with my card. Something occurred to Divine. But maybe I can find another way. Divine climbed the stairs and knocked on Tapshaw's door. She opened it, dressed in pale blue capri pants and a white blouse. He smiled and she returned it. Got some news on Mayflower. I know it's not the weekend, but how about having that tequila now, before the bar closes? I can fill you in. She slipped on flip-flops and put her arm through his.
Let's go.
The bar was within walking distance, a few blocks off the main street. The Mount Kisco area was an interesting mix of working class and mega wealth. The bar they were going to would have no such mix. It was all folks living paycheck to paycheck. They sat outside, a shot of tequila and a bowl of nuts in front of each of them.
Well? Mayflower?
He told her about his meeting with Chilton. So, when they come in with an offer, triple the valuation. They'll still bite. So long as you have the numbers to back it up, and I know you do.
Can I kiss you?
He grinned like a schoolboy. I have no problem with that. She leaned over and pecked him lightly on the cheek, then sat back.
I really appreciate this, Travis. It was so nice of you.
He lifted his shot glass. Hey, I'm a shareholder too, right? They tapped glasses and drank their tequila. So, after you take over the world, what's next?
You think way too highly of me.
Not from where I'm sitting.
It's ironic that I founded a dating service, because I haven't been too lucky in that regard.
Sometimes luck has nothing to do with it. Sometimes it just happens when you least expect it to.
I'm still waiting for that to happen to me. Maybe I work too hard.
There's no maybe about it. You do work too hard. But you clearly love it, so maybe you don't really work a day in your life. Isn't that how the old saying goes? She smiled, and then her expression turned serious.
You haven't seemed yourself lately, Travis. Is everything okay?
A woman was killed at my office.
What?
They thought it was suicide, but turns out someone murdered her.
Oh my God. Why would someone do that?
I don't know. Yet.
Helen told me the police were questioning you, but she didn't say about what.
I think they believe I had something to do with it.
Did you know the woman?
I did.
What was her name?
Sarah Hughes. Tapshaw slowly put down her shot glass, looking like she might be ill.
Sarah Hughes? That's her name?
Yeah. Wait a minute, did you know her?
No, but I know the name.
How?
A woman named Sarah Hughes was one of my very first subscribers on Hummingbird.
Chapter 36. It was the same Sarah Hughes. Divine was in his room staring at her picture on Hummingbird. He'd gone over her dating file. She'd had matches with three men. All had been right around the time she had signed up on the site years earlier. Hughes looked younger and carefree, though she would have already pulled time at the Max prison otherwise known as Cowling Cumley. She had obviously been looking for someone to share her life with and hadn't found him. And perhaps she had grown disenchanted because after these three tries, there had been no more activity on the site for her. She was smiling, her hair was set just so, grazing her shoulders. He knew she had a nice laugh and easygoing manner, nothing pretentious about the woman. He had liked her. He could have maybe come to love her, given time. And now her body had been autopsied, with the remains to be handed over to her crushed parents. At age 28, nothing could be more tragic. He looked up at his open doorway as Tapshaw appeared there.
Is it her?
He nodded slowly.
I'm so sorry.
You have a good memory for names. She walked over and stood beside him.
My first 100 subscribers were the only ones I had for a long time. I studied them every minute of every day, figuring out how to get more just like them. I knew them in some ways better than I knew my own family.
I can see that. She glanced at the image.
Was she nice? I mean, in person?
Yeah, she was very nice.
Did you two... were you dating?
He looked away for a moment. Maybe I would have wanted that.
I sense a but coming.
But she apparently didn't.
Did you two...
TMI, Jill.
Right. Sorry.
She said, her face reddening.
It's just the matchmaker in me.
She looked at the screen again.
Will this help find who hurt her?
Maybe. I looked at her profile. There were three men she had matches with. But I don't know more than that. He glanced at her. Can you help?
Get up.
Tapshaw sat in the chair in front of the screen, cracked her knuckles, and her long, slender fingers flew over the keyboard so fast he could barely follow the movements.
Here are the three men.
Devine looked at the photos of a trio of handsome gents with refined features. They all looked remarkably similar.
And here are their backgrounds.
More key slashes and another screen came up with the bios. One in theater, one in finance, and one in medicine, he said, reading off the information. Do you know what happened to them? Her fingers flashed again and multiple screens came up.
Okay. The one in the theater posted that he's in London, working in the West End. I guess that can be verified. The businessman met his beloved on Hummingbird and is married with a newborn in Boston. Again, that can be checked. Now, the doctor.
She studied the screen, brought up still more screens, studied them, shook her head, and said,
Let me try something.
The keyboard rattled again as she attacked it. Then an obituary popped up with a picture. That's him, said Devine. He's dead? What happened? He was around my age. Tapshaw ran her eye down the page.
He was working in Chicago in a COVID ward near the beginning of the pandemic. He caught the virus and died. No wife and no kids.
Damn. When you think you're having a bad day, think about people like that. She straightened and looked at him.
When I founded Hummingbird, I have to admit, I did it really for myself. It's so hard to meet people and develop a relationship. But then I started thinking beyond myself.
She looked at the screen.
To people like them.
So do you have a profile on Hummingbird?
I used to, and I got some matches, but none that really went anywhere. I think I'm resigned to building my business and then looking for someone.
Well, thanks for all this info. You are a true artist with computers.
I got my first Apple MacBook when I was 8 and never looked back.
I remember you telling me about your parents. Did they encourage you?
Oh, yeah. My dad has a slew of patents he developed for companies like Microsoft and Intel. He also lectures all around the world. My mom teaches physics at Caltech.
Well, you clearly didn't inherit any brains from them, he joked. You told me before that you had a brother?
Dennis. We're twins. He's a scholar athlete, sort of the perfect sibling. It can be intimidating, but I love him to death.
Yeah, I've got the perfect sibling thing going, too. It can be tough, but I don't see how anyone can hold a candle to what you've accomplished. He looked at the keyboard. Hey, Jill, can I ask a favor?
Sure.
He pulled out his phone. I got a weird email from someone who I think might be involved with Sarah's death.
What? Have the police traced it?
That's the thing, it seems to be untraceable. I've had people try, including Will, but no go. She looked intrigued.
Will is very good.
But you might be better.
Send me the email and I'll see what I can do.
Thanks, Jill. After she left, he forwarded her the email. Then Divine took the two remaining names from Yuz's match list and found them online. The actor was indeed in London's West End. He was an understudy in a play there, and had actually performed in the lead role on the night Sarah had died, so he was obviously out. The businessman was employed at Fidelity in Boston. Divine accessed his Facebook page by using the same skullduggery he had with Christian Chilton. On the night Sarah had been killed, the businessman and his family had been in the Netherlands on vacation, with pictures to prove it. A total dead end. Divine grabbed a beer, walked outside, and sat on the front porch of the townhouse. The air had turned cool, the sky was threaded with stars, and the quiet of the night was immensely soothing. He looked over as Helen Spears walked up to him, dressed in a dark jacket and matching skirt, a briefcase in hand.
You're getting in really late, and it's not safe to walk from the station at this hour.
You do it all the time.
Yeah, well, I outweigh you by over 100 pounds, and I'm a badass army ranger. What were you doing?
Working at a firm in town. Part-time until I pass the bar.
She sat next to him and took off her high heels, rubbing her stockinged feet.
Why the sad face?
Just a long, shitty day. No other reason.
Yeah, I had one of those, too.
Then you could use this.
He held up the beer. Spears took two swigs and let them go down slow. She handed the bottle back.
Need that lawyer yet?
Getting really close, I think.
NYPD any closer to nailing whoever killed that woman?
He took another drink and passed the bottle back and told Spears to finish it.
I don't know about that. I do know that the guy here asking me questions lied about being with NYPD.
There apparently is no Detective Carl Hancock, or at least that's my take from the reactions of the real detectives who questioned me.
A fake detective? What the hell is that about?
I wish I knew. I seem to be right in the middle of a little conspiracy.
She shot him a look.
Are any conspiracies actually little?
He eyed her. Not when you're in the middle of one, actually. You gonna do your yoga?
Thinking of bagging it, actually. Why?
He gave her a look up and down, taking the woman all in. She was just mesmerizing to him right now.
I don't know, he lied as he looked away.
Don't you, Travis?
He shot her a glance.
What?
You ever seen me reading Braille? No, because I'm not blind.
She stood, put on her heels, and said,
Give me a few minutes to freshen up.
He glanced up at her, thoroughly taken aback by this abrupt development.
You sure about this, Helen? I mean,
to Divine, it all seemed sudden, but also a long time in coming, with lots of glances and sneaked looks and innuendos that danced around probably the most natural and difficult phenomena between two people.
I'm attracted to you, and you to me. We're consenting adults, are we not?
Divine didn't answer. He didn't think he had to. He gave her 10 minutes and then headed up. She was lying on the bed when he walked into her room. She had on a loose-fitting top and a pair of pajama shorts. As he slipped next to her, Spears met him with her mouth. After 5 minutes of feeling each other out in both familiar and unfamiliar ways, they slowly undressed one another. She pushed him flat on his back and climbed on top. She looked at his shoulder where the shrapnel had torn through, with some of the metal still in there. She next glanced down at his damaged calf.
Still hurt?
Not right now, no. Her lips curled into a smile.
Thank you for your service, soldier.
He grinned back. Fuck me, Legal Eagle.
Your wish is my command.
20 breathless minutes later, she toppled off her perch and nestled beside him.
Been a while,
she said, nicking his chest with her nails. For you or me?
Both, I think.
Yeah. Spears closed her eyes, her hand gripping his, and fell asleep. He lay there with her for about an hour before quietly disengaging and heading to his room. Later, when 4 o'clock came and his phone alarm went off, Divine didn't budge. The rain was pouring outside, and he heard a crack of thunder. A moment later, the accompanying lightning brightened his room briefly. No workout this morning. He needed to sleep anyway, but he stared at the ceiling. And on its surface, Divine saw the image of a dead Sarah Hughes, and his heart felt like it was about to break. Chapter 37. Divine had arrived at the train station a little early and had a chat with a man who worked there. The security cameras were often not working, he was told, and the police had not been by to check them. That information had cost Divine $10. He had a mobile ticketing app on his phone and paid for his train passage that way. The conductor would simply zap the screen with his reader, so there would be a record for when he had used it. The only problem was you could still buy single tickets at the machine using cash. There would be no record attached to that, or so the police would argue. And he could have driven his motorcycle into the city. If he took the Henry Hudson Bridge on the way in, there would be a toll and record thereof. But there were alternate routes he could take that did not include toll roads. So that would not be conclusive again, as far as the cops were concerned. But you didn't use your card to get into the building that night, and your name still showed up on the entry and exit log. Someone cloned your card. The only question is who. As he waited for the train, he thought about Cowell. The man must have somehow delayed giving the electronic log to the cops. How he had managed to do that in a murder investigation, Divine didn't know. The guy was rich and influential and probably had a direct line to the mayor's office. But at some point, he would have to turn it over. And Cowell intimated my picture was on the security video. Will the police think I'm stupid enough to have left that kind of trail? But criminals were stupid. You heard such stories all the time. But what would his motive be? Not the pregnancy. Hughes had already terminated it. Then something occurred to him. If I knew she was pregnant with my child, and I wanted the kid, and found out she had terminated it, that was a clear motive. The train opened its door, and he climbed on board. With these perilous thoughts running through his head, he was mentally exhausted before he'd even gotten to work. The storm had spent its fury, and the 620 ran dry all the way to the palace pool. And there she was. Now he knew her name, at least. Michelle Montgomery was staring into the pool water. This time her bathing suit was, shocker, not a bikini. It was a one-piece, the color of the sky. After Divine had met the woman and intimated that there were lots of guys watching her, maybe Montgomery had decided to show some modesty. Divine thought that right up until the moment she turned, revealing that the one-piece had a thong backside showing off her tanned buttocks. Montgomery catwalk stepped away, and then raised both her hands overhead and flipped off the morning Harlem Line riders with both barrels. He had to smile. The lady had a certain style, he had to admit, along with a pair of brass balls. The train rode on while Divine thought about the previous night with Helen Spears. It had been a while since he had been with a woman. He knew the exact date, in fact. And that might cause him problems down the road because that woman had been Sarah Hughes. They had had sex at her place in Brooklyn. It had been a wonderful experience, and Divine had thought there would be many more. But it was not to be, and it had not been his decision. It had been hers. His phone buzzed. By the string of weird digits, he could tell it was an international number. Hello?
Mr. Devine?
Yes?
This is Ellen Hughes. I apologize for the early call.
That explained it. The phone number was from New Zealand. The mother sounded eerily like Sarah on the phone, and he felt immensely uncomfortable hearing her voice when he had just been thinking about having had sex with her deceased daughter. No problem, Mrs. Hughes.
Please, make it Ellen. I understand the police have been by to see you.
They have been. I told them what I knew, and it was left at that.
Did they tell you why they came by?
Yes, that you had contacted them.
Can you come by the house later? We'd like to talk to you.
I can come by after work, say around 8.
8 will be fine. We'll see you then.
He put his phone away and thought about this all the way into the city. Devine was sitting at his cubicle when a message dropped into his business email box.
5 o'clock, top floor. I'll have someone escort you. BC.
He fingered his phone, very glad that all of his evidence from that night was safely on his personal cloud. But even with that, Cal could have something up his sleeve. He looked around the room and noticed several people staring at him before quickly looking away. This had happened so frequently throughout the day that Devine finally stood and walked over to one woman who had done this multiple times.
Is there a problem?
Her name was Lydia White. She had dark hair and was heavy set and was probably going to make it to the finish line at Cal because she was smart, worked like a dray horse, and knew what she wanted. He hadn't spoken 50 words to her, and she had never given him the evil eye like this before.
I don't know. Why don't you tell me?
And that's supposed to mean what, exactly? All tapping had ceased, and the rest of the burners stopped working to listen.
The detectives talked to you.
They talked to a lot of people.
No, I asked around. It seems they really just talked to you, at least more than once. And you knew Sarah.
We all knew Sarah, everybody in this room.
Maybe you knew her better than the rest of us.
And you're basing this on what?
I don't have to base it on anything.
She looked him over.
You were in the army. You know how to kill people.
Yeah, I was killing the enemies of this country, and don't bother thanking me for my service. I think we're past that. White flushed at his words and looked away. He glanced around at the others. Anybody else have a problem they'd like to bring to my attention? The key started tapping again, soon turning into an avalanche of sound. That was why most people here wore headphones or AirPods. Devine sat back down and put in his AirPods. They did nothing to quell all the noise in his head. He worked until 4:58. Then the door opened, and there appeared Willard Paulson, Cowell's lapdog. He caught Devine's eye and motioned him to come. Devine left with the burner's gazes on him the whole way. Paulson said nothing, and Devine had nothing he wanted to say to the dweeb. Paulson used his card to access the elevator bank. It looked just like Devine's, a 125, as Valentine had described it. Easily clonable bullshit.
I didn't think this elevator went to the penthouse, said Devine. Only Mr. Cowell has access.
Paulson shot him a glance.
We'll get off at the floor below and someone will meet you and take you to Mr. Cowell.
As they approached the 51st floor, Devine eyed Paulson, who was looking at his phone. Devine leaned against the wall and used his elbow to nudge the button for that floor. It didn't light up, and they whizzed right past it.
That's interesting. Not even the inner circle can get in there.
The doors opened, and Devine got off, where he was met by her smiling face.
Hello, Mr. Devine,
said Michelle Montgomery. Chapter 38. The doors closed behind Paulson, leaving Devine and Montgomery all alone. She was dressed for the office, not the pool. Dark pinstriped jacket and slacks, white blouse, no hint of cleavage, 2-inch pumps, hair parted and a little slicked back on the sides. Her tan wasn't as vivid under artificial light. He followed her down a long hall.
So why did you get picked for this assignment?
Because I don't think Brad trusts anyone who works here.
By the way, I loved your act this morning. Both finger barrels to the whole train. She smiled.
Did you also like the view?
He involuntarily glanced at her bottom.
I thought so.
When they arrived at another elevator, she held a phone up in front of a reader there. Cal's phone? The doors opened, they entered, and she hit the button.
So can I be allowed to hold a billionaire's phone for a second?
She looked over at him, smiled, and passed it across. The phone was one of those new big apples. The cover was gold and shiny. And the screensaver was a Bugatti Chiron.
Of course it is.
He took out his phone and snapped a photo of Cal's screen.
Why'd you do that?
He laughed. For posterity? She laughed too. He handed back the phone. She said,
So, how did a billionaire's phone feel?
Heavy as a ball and chain. I'm actually surprised Cal trusts anyone with it. She shrugged.
What am I going to do with it? Make a long-distance call?
She obviously doesn't know the possibilities, thought Divine. But I do. I ran into your family friend last night.
Christian told me.
And what else did Christian tell you?
That you kicked his ass and the asses of his two large friends.
And did he tell you why?
It was over a girl. He didn't say he was in the right, just in case you were wondering. He's actually a nice guy. A little full of himself, but I've seen far worse from guys with money.
The doors opened directly into the foyer of the large penthouse.
Nice place, said Divine.
Yeah, if you like stuffy, over-furnished, and mundane. I like the other house a lot better. Minimalism is my thing.
She called out.
Brad, he's here.
Do you know why I am here?
I don't get involved in his business. I told you that already. You coming by my place like I asked you to?
How late are you up?
As late as it takes. I'll text you my address. It's not far from here.
Maybe farther than you think, at least from my perspective, he thought.
Divine, called out Cowell as he rounded a corner.
He held out his hand and Montgomery placed the phone directly in it.
This way. Thanks, Michelle.
Montgomery smiled inscrutably at Divine and disappeared somewhere. Cal said,
Follow me.
They entered what looked like a study. Cal closed the double doors and said,
What do you want to drink?
Beer?
No, we'll drink brandy.
Okay. So much for having a choice with this guy. Cal poured out two snifters from a bar set against a wall and handed one to Divine. Then he took out an electronic wand from inside a cabinet and ran it over Divine.
Just checking for wires and stuff. Can never be too careful these days. Take out your phone and turn it off.
As Divine turned his phone off, Cal said,
Everybody, and I mean everybody, is spying on everybody else with this electronic shit. I don't like using email or texts. I don't even like calling people because you never know who's listening. The important stuff, I do it the old-fashioned way, analog, face-to-face.
They sat across from each other in leather club chairs.
So I've been thinking about our little discussion.
And?
And I need to see your hand before you see mine.
Divine showed him the pictures and video on his phone.
What were you doing up there anyway?
Asked Cal, shaking his head. Seeing where Sarah Hughes died, then I heard you two going at it.
So you didn't go up there to catch us in the act?
Not my intent, no, said Divine.
But you did take the pics and the little film.
Wouldn't you? Cal said,
So let me show you my hand. You killed Hughes.
No, I didn't.
Let me rephrase that. The evidence that I've seen is enough to convict your ass of murdering Sarah.
And that evidence is?
Video of you entering the building, and your security card showing you accessing the building and going up to the 52nd floor in time to kill her.
Both can be fudged, as you already conceded.
And why haven't you turned that over to the police? Before, you said I had you to thank for that. What does that mean? I haven't turned it over to the cops, because we actually had a technical glitch. Devine sat back. I'm confused, Mr. Cowell. See, at that point, I would have made a perfect patsy for the murder. Leaves Cowell and Cumley unaffected. I knew Sarah. I was a disgruntled employee, former military, with maybe some PTSD baggage. Look at the shiny object here, and not over there. Police are off the premises. So what gives? What gives is that I do not have to explain myself or my reasoning to you. So in exchange for what's on your phone, the video of you and your entry log disappears. What do you say? How can I possibly be sure you'll really do that? And how can I know you don't have that stuff stashed in multiple places? At some point, we have to trust each other. If that's the case, why exchange at all? Mutual assured destruction. I was about to propose it myself, but there is no statute of limitations on murder. The video of me and Jen shows up somewhere 10 years from now. What I got is miraculously discovered and goes right to NYPD, and you go to Sing Sing or whatever place they have going at the time, and you never get out. Are we clear on all that? Why do you care if anyone sees the pictures or video? You're not married. You're both consenting adults. It's the optics, Devine. I'm the head of a major investment house. I don't need that crap plastered over the trash press. Clients wouldn't like it. They'll think I'm reckless. They'll think I'm demeaning to women. And ladies run some of our biggest clients. He added in a growl, and I talked to you before about that. Use your damn brain. Okay, fair enough. Cowell eyed him. So who killed Sarah? No clue. Did you have the same relationship with Sarah you do with Jennifer? Just like the last time you asked that, I'm not going to answer. But I will say that what Jen and I have is special. Devine visualized them on the desk and tried hard not to laugh. You mean like you have with Michelle Montgomery? Michelle is short term. She knows that. She's great to look at, great in the sack, and that's the extent of her repertoire. Jen is different. Gorgeous with the brains to match. Devine felt his temper rising with these callous statements about Montgomery. He decided to change the subject. Sarah had an abortion. He couldn't tell from Cal's features whether he was aware of this or not. Well, I'm not the father, said Cal. How can you know for sure? A certain act has to take place for that to happen. It did not take place between Sarah and me. He paused. Not for lack of trying. She was like Jen, brainy, beautiful, but also aloof, played hard to get. She drove me nuts, but I could never land her. You really are a dick, thought Devine. Cal finished his brandy and rose. Okay, we done here? Devine stood. Done. Good. Now get your ass back to work and make me some damn money, Devine.